staff and members, and I also want to thank you for all your hard work, sometimes late in the hour, but we think this is an important enough measure that we should move it now. Today I'm here to present AB 465, a bill to better protect survivors of domestic violence from gun violence. AB 465 would codify two existing California rules of court that establish a judicial oversight process for courts to ensure that firearm relinquishment and domestic violence restraining order cases actually take place, and would make this process consistent throughout California. It would also align the civil rules language with the criminal rule, which mandates these processes and required during an expedited timeline. In California, 33% of women and 27% of men experienced some form of domestic violence during their lifetimes. In 2018, there were over 166,000 domestic violence-related calls for assistance across the state of California, and over 45% of these calls reported some kind of weapon being involved in the abuse. We also know that the presence of a firearm in the home during an incident of domestic violence increases the risk of homicide by at least 500%. In fact, over half of the female victims of domestic violence homicide in the United States are killed with a firearm. Every month, an average of 52 women are shot and killed in the United States by an intimate partner. And nearly 1 million women today are alive who have been shot at by an intimate partner. Even with our state's robust firearm legislation, there are still over 23,000 armed prohibited persons who have failed to relinquish their weapons. Of those, 23,000, 18 have become a prohibited person due to a restraining order. So under existing law, when a person has a restraining order put on them for domestic violence, they automatically are supposed to relinquish their firearms within 24 hours of that being happened. The two rules of court that are supposed to implement this on a limited and oftentimes it's inconsistent. So when somebody goes then back before the judge, somebody gets a temporary restraining order, they then come back. See the judge. The judge doesn't often ask, have you relinquished your firearms, and do you have some kind of proof of that, or are you still holding them? Now, oftentimes a woman is going to come to the court with that said abuser and may not even have an attorney present, right, because a lot of times it's in civil court, family court. So you go in, you don't even know you're supposed to ask the judge to ask those questions. And so oftentimes it's the poorest women who are left without an attorney, without someone to speak for them, without knowing the right questions to ask. You shouldn't have to know what the questions that you need to ask the judge about your own legal rights when you go into a court of law. So this would just simply mandate that it'll be consistent across the state of California that when that judge sees that person again for that very first time, that they have to then determine if that person has relinquished their firearms as they are already bound to do under law. This bill is supported by the California District Attorneys Association, the Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, the California Partnership to End Domestic Violence, and the California Police Chiefs Association. As you know, there was just recently, locally, there was somebody who was supposed to have given up their weapons. A woman called to say, I need help getting out of my house. When the police officer showed up, that abuser opened fire and shot and killed an officer. So this is not only to keep victims of domestic violence safe, but also our first responders who have to oftentimes go out on these calls. And, you know, a social worker or anybody else who might show up should know that if somebody has a restraining order against them and they are not supposed to be in charge of a possession, that they don't have it. With me here today to answer any questions you may have about the process is Allison Kephart, the Director of Legal Services at Weave, who helps to represent survivors of domestic violence in court at no cost.
Move the bill. Bill's been moved. Is there any questions or discussion by our...
Do we have any other witnesses at all?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a good point. Do the roll call to establish a quorum. All right, let's establish a quorum first.
Skinner?
I haven't been chairing for so long. I'm actually here.
Morlock?
Present.
Bradford?
Here.
Jackson? Mitchell? Mitchell, Weiner.
All right, we'll return to our good process that we do in committees. You may state your name and your support, and then we can see if anybody else is here in support.
Thank you. My name is Allison Kephart. I'm the Director of Legal Services with Weave, and here to answer any questions that the committee may have about the process.
Great. Now, are there any people here in support?
Do
Chair and members, Jonathan Feldman, California Police Chiefs Association support.
Great. Any others? All right, is there anyone here in opposition? Oh. Sure. Oh, I think they can fit. We got two chairs. Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. Andy Liebenbaum on behalf of the Judicial Council of California, and we are regretfully in opposition of the bill. The significance of relinquishing weapons upon the issuance of DVROs and criminal protective orders cannot be overstated, and the Judicial Council recognizes that swift action is imperative. The council also recognizes the need to ensure that rights are not unnecessarily and unreasonably impacted while restraining orders are requested. AB 465 needs more work. The procedures in the bill do far more than codify two rules of court. Instead, they appear, although it's somewhat unclear, to substitute the criminal procedures and put them into family law. And there are problems with that. In the criminal universe, defendants are represented. They have counsel. There is law enforcement present. In the family law, as the assembly member rightly pointed out, people may not be represented, which means that there are procedures that need to be put in place for the courts to advise and guide people in the process of protecting themselves. The bill has the right heart. We just want to be, the courts want to be at the table to help the procedures work so we know what it is that we can do and what it is that we cannot do. We feel that the bill is ambiguous, that there are significant gaps in our understanding of what the courts are being asked to do. Making findings in the negative, for example, is one of the things that the language would suggest. How family courts that don't have these common relationships are supposed to communicate with law enforcement, how the courts will revamp our rules, our forms, our calendaring, our personnel, and our training to make sure that we are good to go when this important change goes into place. The Judicial Council very much would like to work on this. We would very much like to be a partner with the author as this moves forward, but we feel that unfortunately in its current form, it should not go forward, and we must regretfully oppose.
Before we hear from the next witness in opposition, I just wanted to raise that some of your concerns are related to the family court process, which is part of the Judiciary Committee, where this bill will go next. And what our purview is in the criminal side, and this does not change the criminal code part of this, so you're not to discount the concerns, but what's relevant to us is the criminal side. So just wanted to put that on the record, and now we will hear from our next witness.
Erin Ryberg here on behalf of the California Judges Association, and us also in regretful opposition to AB 465, and we align a lot of our comments with the Judicial Council, so I won't go back into those concerns, but I just wanted to say that...
Could you speak into the mic a little bit more?
Yes, sorry. First and foremost, I want to emphasize that the relinquishment of firearms by restrained persons should be a priority, and the courts do play a role in that. However, AB 465, as written, either has too many teeth because of separation of powers, embroilment, and due process concerns, or not enough teeth because there's no bench warrants, no explicit contempt, and no duty of law enforcement to investigate. Because of the last-minute consideration of this bill, many questions have been raised, but no answers provided. And CJA, and for these reasons, CJA respectfully requests a no vote so that we can have conversations and discussions on this in the fall to see how the courts can work with law enforcement to make sure that these firearms are removed. Thank you.
And are those concerns primarily around the portion of the bill that is written that affects the judicial, the judicial code versus the penal code?
I think it's heightened in the family code section of this, because I know that because there's usually is counsel on the criminal side, and the defendant is already sometimes in the custody, so the notice requirements are alleviated slightly for the criminal side, but we still think there are some implications, which I outlined in the letter.
All right, any other witnesses in opposition? Okay, given that some people came in late, were there any other witnesses in support before we open the dais for discussion? Okay, let's see the discussion. Ms. Senator Mitchell.
Thank you. Assemblymember, I think the term gut and amend has a uber negative connotation, so I don't want to necessarily use the term, but can you explain to me why this bill is before me now? I'll frame it that way, as opposed to next year.
Certainly. Yeah, and I don't think anybody likes the term gut and amend, and I am not a fan or one that, who uses them much. However, in light, it feels to me of the urgency that we continue to see around the state and the nation, and we pulled together a coalition of law enforcement, worked with my DA, domestic violence organizations, gun organizations, and thought, how can we thread this needle now. I will share with you, Senator and Senators, last week in Stockton Unified School District, a block and a half from an east side school, very poor socio-demographic, a woman had invited a friend to come and stay with her who was afraid for her life from her spouse. When they left that morning to go to school, he was in the front yard with a loaded firearm and began firing at them. They were able to get back into the house, and the law enforcement showed up, and that individual is now deceased, was turned the gun on law enforcement at that time. That entire school had to go on lockdown. I've talked at length with the teachers and principals afterwards about the horror that is. That was one of their teachers also that was in the house. And so just the compounding of that, especially in poor neighborhoods, I just feel like we didn't have a year to wait. If we have a tool that we can put into effect, and I acknowledge that we may have more work to do, and I'm willing to work on some cleanup things as we move forward. But I think with the heightened sense that we all have that guns are getting out of control, and that we know factually that people who have domestic violence issues and have weapons are more likely to use them.
Absolutely.
I didn't want to wait for a year.
And I get that and fully appreciate that and respect that. I am intrigued by opposition's argument around kind of the difference of the rules and experiences in the two courts. Mm-hmm. And if the bill goes far enough to make sure that in non-criminal court settings where there isn't always representation, that what your intent really can happen. Mm-hmm. Do you have any concerns about that?
But you, Alice?
Sure. Thank you for your question. I think the way, and this does look a little bit more at the civil code, so, mm-hmm. or at the civil mm-hmm. code section, which I recognize is a little more under the purview of our next committee. Mm-hmm. But I believe in that particular realm, that's the realm that I have the most experience in family court, mm-hmm. Because of the nature of the proceedings and the fact that there often are not attorneys mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. either side. Mm-hmm. The only, and there's not a law enforcement typically involved, mm-hmm. the only individual in that arena who has the ability to make sure that these relinquishments are happening and to follow up on this is the judicial officer that's right. hearing that case.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Other, Senator Jackson.
Yes, and I appreciate that there are definite distinctions to be drawn here, and so we'll be hearing that bill in Judiciary Committee this afternoon. And I apologize for being late. There were just two other other bills I was hearing just before coming to this. I would appreciate, though, the getting a little bit more clarity on what exactly you're trying to do, and I know you're trying to sort of walk a tightrope between the criminal requirements and the family law requirements. My understanding is you're trying to make these a little tighter than the family law, but not quite as they are in the criminal courts, or in the criminal process, I should say. And then if the opposition could articulate, perhaps it's again, and I apologize, what the Judicial Council's concerns are, practically speaking. How are we going to do this? You're not in a criminal court proceeding, so do you have to give notice and the right to get counsel or not? How are you going to implement this? I know it's a new crime to violate this. I'm wondering what the family law experience has been and why we're sort of trying to create this hybrid.
So, from the family law perspective, we're not, and I just want to clarify, this bill is not changing the relinquishment requirement. That already exists. So there already exists a section in the family code that requires anyone who is subject to a domestic violence restraining order to relinquish their firearms upon being given notice of that order. And that includes temporary protective orders that are issued oftentimes on an ex parte basis right. with the court. So the requirement to comply with that relinquishment isn't triggered, to use a loaded word, until the restrained person is served with a copy of the restraining order. And at that point, they have 24 hours to relinquish their firearms to law enforcement or a licensed gun dealer and 48 hours to provide documentation to the family court that they've done so. There's a Judicial Council form to do it, and they're supposed to provide a receipt that shows they did it. The reality is, because there are not oftentimes, law enforcement is not oftentimes involved, other than perhaps to serve the restraining order, and there are not attorneys involved at that point in time, the reality is that these restrained parties are not relinquishing their weapons, whether that's because they feel they don't need to or because they just don't read the restraining order or what, for whatever reason, they're not. So in the family law context, when the two parties come to the first noticed hearing, which is noticed by serving the temporary right. order, that is the place that we'd like to have the judicial officer do an analysis of, has the court received information that the restrained party does possess a firearm or has access and control over a firearm, mm-hmm. and have they complied with the relinquishment requirements? And we're asking that that happen regardless of what happens on the merits of the case. So it's not uncommon to have a restrained party appear and ask for a continuance to get counsel or something like that. No problem there, but we are asking that the judicial officer at that point
make that determination regardless of whether the case is continued.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
And the Judicial Council, through the chair, the Judicial Council is opposed because?
Thank you. Because we don't believe that we understand fully the procedures. We don't believe that the courts would have quality information to make a finding in family court. Because people are largely unrepresented, we don't know what information would be available upon which courts could make a reasonable finding one way or another that would actually result in the relinquishment. The procedures for relinquishment already exist, but they were hard fought to get to. We want to work with the author on making sure we understand what the procedures are, what the courts can do, what the limits of the courts can do. Making findings because somebody comes into court and says they're in danger may not result in a finding that there are firearms when, in fact, there are firearms in the house, which would mean that the courts have failed that person, and that seems like a terrible situation. So simply, we just want to be at the table and work it out and make sure that the courts understand what they can do and what we can be helpful in.
Okay. I think we can follow up on this in the family law arena. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Not to belabor it, but if you made this a two-year bill and then put an urgency clause on it, and in January we get it passed after you've collaborated, then it could be signed by the governor, be effective 4 months from now. So we're not talking about a whole year later, and I'm wondering why that route isn't being taken.
This is our first committee hearing. And while we always intend to take it all the way across the finish line, we know sometimes halftime is called. So our intention is to continue to move this forward. We think there's urgency involved with it, because no matter the court, a domestic violence victim is still, I mean, guns still kill, right? And they are already supposed to have been relinquished. We feel like we can do some cleanup language later if we need to, but certainly it would be through the committee's process that we would decide if we're going to go all the way right now or if we're going to pause until January.
It's a righteous bill, mm-hmm. and but it's the last week of session, and it's like, ah!
Yeah, I understand.
Okay, and you've got people that want to help with, yeah. you know, make it right the first time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Senator Moorlach. Any other comments or questions? All right. Appreciate Judicial Council's concerns from the criminal side. The bill, as written, does not disturb our processes. Maybe that's the inaccurate word, but whatever is. And so I'm willing to support it today. And it is true sometimes that rushing things can be whatever we, but we do have the ability to fix, and I know that the Judicial Committee will be very judicious, because I know the chair, and I know they'll be careful about reviewing it. I'm just struck by the numbers, the percent of women who are murdered in our country, in our state, as a result of domestic violence. That's your most as a woman. I'm not going to be murdered except by the intimate partner. That's pretty much what the stats show. The other, and this may be why law enforcement is in support, the records show that at minimum there are 5 sworn officers killed when they intervene in a domestic violence dispute. So our own peace officers, it's one of the most dangerous situations that we often talk about. The type of every time a sworn officer puts their uniform on and steps out the door, that they're taking their life in their hands, that percentage goes up so much higher when they are intervening in a domestic violence dispute. And there's also a very significant correlation between the abusers or perpetrators of domestic violence and other violent crime. So I am very, very supportive of trying to better our relinquishment or obtaining those weapons from the domestic abuser as possible. So for that reason, I'm willing to move it on now, and we will see how the Judiciary Committee handles it. All right, let's do a roll call. Oh, I'm sorry. We had a motion. Ms. Mitchell.
Oh, I thought we didn't have a quorum at that time.
That's okay. You're right. We might not have. Then I'll take your motion.
Yeah, but she made the motion.
Okay, she did make the motion. That's why I thought you made the motion. Right. Okay.
So we'll take it now.
All right. Go for it.
Motion is due past to Dijish. Skinner?
Aye.
Skinner, aye. Moorlach? Bradford?
Aye.
Moorlach, aye. Bradford, aye. Jackson?
Aye.
Jackson, aye. Mitchell?
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Wiener?
Aye.
Wiener, aye.
All right. That bill is out. The vote was 6-0. And thanks. With that, with that, this committee, public safety, will be adjourned. Thank you. Maybe for the year.